is Building on the Solid Rock with Pastor Troy Neely of Calvary Chapel Solid Rock.
Let every family find faith in the Father's love. This is where it begins. This is our cry, this is our song, Jesus the way. We find our life in Him.
Should remember that God is holy, that we're not on our own deciding for ourselves right and wrong. I worship God when I look at mountains. I worship God when I do this. I worship God. We come together and remember God has a prescription for worship too. He has the prescription for worship. We come and worship His way. Yeah, that way may feel better to you. Yeah, that may look better to you. But what does God want? What is genuine worship?
Is your worship focused on glorifying and pleasing God? As Pastor Troy leads us through this passage, we see how Jesus reacted to the corruption of the temple. The temple was being used for self-serving purposes. Today, we have the opportunity to examine the modern church and evaluate the heart of our worship. Now, make sure and stay with us after Pastor Troy's message. I want to share our contact information as well as how you can receive a free copy of this broadcast. Now, here's Pastor Troy with today's message.
We're in Matthew chapter 21, verses 12 through 17. You ever been in a situation where you thought, how did I get here? I don't mean like driving. Sometimes you're driving on autopilot and you go, how did I get here? But similar to that, you wonder, I was doing so well in life. I was either so close to the Lord or I was doing so great. How did I get here? How did I get to the point of making these bad decisions? How did I get to the point where I'm distanced from my Lord? Or you name it. But you ask the question, how did I get here? It's a slippery slope. It's a slow digression in your life that leads us to those places. I bring that up because I imagine if the religious leaders or even the Jews at the time where Jesus enters today and turns over the tables, if they really backed up and look at themselves and their temple rituals and the things that were going on in the temple, they might ask the same question. How did we get here? How do we go from where God established us to what we're doing now? It's a question we might all ask ourselves today. How did I get here? The purpose of the temple was to allow God's people to come into His presence, to be before Him, to experience Him, to experience His forgiveness, to offer thanksgiving. It was to be a house of prayer, a house of sacrifice, a house of praise. But in its highest, truest form, it was to be a holy place. The same is to be true wherever God's people gather, what we would call today the church. God's character hasn't changed because we've become the New Testament church. We don't go to a temple now. In fact, the idea of gathering seems to be still important to the Lord. See, for Israel, God told them, don't worship there, worship here. Worship at this central location because He had those who were trained, skilled to live the life that they were to look at and go, wow, God is holy, as a reminder. But if they were to just go offer sacrifices, then they would end up being like the period of the judges where they just kind of did whatever they thought was right. Oh, we don't cut our sacrifice that way. Oh, we do it here. We do it on uncut stones. Well, we try this. And everybody would do it their own way. But at least once a year, they were to come before the one true God and offer their sacrifice and remember that He is holy. And so when we gather as a church at large, we should remember that God is holy. That we're not on our own deciding for ourselves right and wrong. I worship God when I look at mountains. I worship God when I do this. I worship God. We come together and remember God has a prescription for worship too. He has the prescription for worship. We come and worship His way. Yeah, that way may feel better to you. Yeah, that may look better to you. But what does God want? What is genuine worship? But just like the temple had become corrupt and the worship was no longer genuine, the same thing I think is true in so much of, at least in the West, our church culture. Now, let me just give you some background. The temple in Israel had become corrupt. That was the place God dwelt. That was holy ground. And even though God had shown Himself to them in that place, they still had such a lack of fear of the Lord that they were able to lie and cheat people and do all of those things in the house of God. And let me say, they were doing things that should not be done in the house of God. But in my experience and what I've heard, as before I started this work, we went out and we visited a bunch of churches. It was great. It was a good experience. But I also got tired of it only because you want family. You know, you want to settle in and you want to serve the Lord and you want to go to war with a group of people and worship the Lord together. At least that's what I feel. And you want that. And so it got tiring, but it was a good experience. I found that there are some great churches out there. But what I also found was not what I expected. I thought most all churches were great, and there were some bad ones out there. But what I found was, I don't know what Jesus would think about some of what goes on in church today. My experience. See, what I started to hear out there was that some were going to church in order to make contacts. That was the reason. There was a sense of status attached to their name, for business or for position or whatever. What church do you go to? Well, I go to this church. Oh, and I lead this ministry in that church. Oh, that gives you more status. I found that out there. I heard it as if it was important to some. Making those contacts, selling those products, doing those things. It was all out there. Not only that type of making contact, but getting the dates. Singles ministry was the most important to some. And a large single ministry, by the way. What do they believe? Who cares? They got the girls. You know, we can figure out what they believe later on. Right now, I've got a mission. And like I said one time about myself, I was no wolf, but I was a very aggressive sheep at one time. And some of them are out there, those aggressive sheep. Just, what do they teach? I don't care. Math. Baby, baby. So, there you go. You've been there, right? Yeah. They're out there. And so that's their reason for finding a church. That's their reason to flocking to a church. Or to find social fulfillment. I need friends. I want a place where I'm welcome, where I have stuff. And then that is what they're looking for in satisfaction. Well, I wonder what Jesus would actually say after sitting through a traditional regular service in our culture, visiting different varieties. What would He say afterwards? I've even looked at myself. And I thought, you know, for me, I guess my weakness is I might put Jesus to sleep. There's no church. This is about me. This is going to be exciting, man. My word is exciting. Like, His word is exciting. I get in the way sometimes trying to explain things. But His word is alive. It is exciting. If you get into it for yourself, you'll find that to be true. His word is alive. It's like it speaks to you. Like he knows what's going on in your life. Not the front, not the cover-up stuff. He knows the deep stuff. And when we get in His Word and when we study it, we get to know who He is and we realize He knows who we are. It's a place, not only those who flock to the churches, but the leaders in the churches. I wonder what Jesus might say. Because I've seen places where the leaders are like they're above the people. They can't be touched by the people. They live above the people They live above the means of the people. And I've seen that the leaders in some churches are taking advantage of people using positions. I've heard this. They'll say, you know, before I got involved in the church, my pool of girls that were possibilities for me were small, but man, once I became a worship leader, or once I become a leader in the church or something, it's like the pool opens up for you. You would say that? Yes. Not yes, it opens up for you, but yes, they're saying that. They're thinking that. This is going on in the church culture that we live in. And people are being manipulated from the pulpit. Manipulated to give money. Manipulated to serve the Lord. Pressure tactics. You're not all in for the Lord if you're not giving. I mean, I'm sure that you probably spend money on magazines or certain things that you could give to the Lord. Couldn't you? Now, I don't want to convict you, but yeah. It's coming from the pulpit. I experienced it. Like I said, there are great churches, a lot of great churches. But I also experienced a lot more of that than I thought I would. A lot more. And it discouraged me. I could not believe it. When I was a kid, I never thought church was like that. And I hope it wasn't when I was a kid. I hope I wasn't that blinded. But now it's like the church, I don't know what's going on, except that we're changing. Well, today we're going to see how Jesus responds to the going on in the temple. And it's an exciting service. He just rode into town in Palm Sunday, and he visits the temple. Now, let me just give you the timeline here, because it seems like in Matthew's gospel, he rides into town and goes right for the temple, starts overturning things. But that's not how it happened. Actually, he rides into town. He goes in, if you look at Mark's gospel, he goes in, he kind of checks out the temple, checks things out. Maybe he's just kind of going, all right, tomorrow I'm going to overturn that. I'm going to throw that there. You might want to stand back tomorrow, all right? Get away from that. And just sitting things up, because he's eyeballing. He's checking it out. He just has time for that. And it says, because it was late, then they went out to Bethany and stayed the night. And then they came in the next day into town, where Jesus came on a mission to make a point. And verse 12, then Jesus went into the temple of God and drove out all those who bought and sold in the temple, and overturned the tables of the money changers and the seats of those who sold doves. And he said to them, it is written, my house shall be called a house of prayer, but you have made it a den of thieves. Now that sounds like he's having a bad day. Or maybe our Messiah needs anger management classes. It could be the stress. I mean, think about that. We understand stress. That's when we lose our cool, right? Stressed out, there's just a lot going on, we justify it. I'm sorry I did that outburst on you, but there's just so much going on right now. And so I justify my outburst. And so maybe the Christ is justified. He's going to the cross. He knows that. Things aren't right. His disciples, they're not getting it. He's told them over and over, I'm going to the cross. Well, we want to be important in the kingdom. You guys aren't getting it. And so maybe he's just like, man, I'm sick of this. Throwing stuff down. No, that's not what happened. Not at all. And by the way, we are never justified in outbursts. Never justified in outbursts. Even though everything else is falling apart, even though someone else may have done the wrong thing, you are not justified in an outburst. See, what Jesus is displaying here is not an outburst. But everything he did was calculated, intentional, to make a point. Well, that's what I'm doing. I'm so mad, I want to make a point. So I just throw stuff and I break stuff and I break the pencil and I kick people over. Point made. You didn't even know what you did. Half the stuff you wish you hadn't done. All the stuff everybody else wishes you hadn't done. We're not justified in those things. This is a righteous anger that Jesus is demonstrating. Righteous anger. There is a such thing as righteous anger. In Ephesians 4:26, we read, be angry and do not sin. In other words, there is a reason to be angry. He's not saying don't be angry and don't sin. There is a reason to be angry, but don't sin in that anger. Don't let that that feeling. And besides, it's supposed to be not a selfish anger. See, our anger is always about us. I don't want it that way. I don't like it that way. This affects me. This takes from me. This, that. And so I get mad because of me, because I don't want that. So that's self-righteous anger. That's not righteous anger. Righteous anger is, man, I hate it that adults abuse children. I hate that. Oh, should we just sit by and go, don't get angry? No, that makes me angry. And by the grace of God, we don't go over and choke people, you know, for doing stuff. It's not our place. Because God said, vengeance, taking vengeance for yourself, that's not yours. And wrath, that's not yours either. But leave that to God. And so he says, your job is to love people, to do the right thing, to love justice too. Now he set up a system of justice, not personal justice, where I go out and I kill everybody I think did my family wrong. But where we bring people into the process of getting a trial, being standing before a judge, and receiving a fair case. That kind of justice is what we're kind of reduced to now. It's imperfect because we have people and we have a court system that's out of control. God's law, it fits in our book, our Bible. But our laws, because people are so technical, takes shelves and shelves and shelves. Because if I dump some hot coffee on me on accident, I'm going to sue somebody because, well, they didn't tell me it would burn me. I'm suing them. That was hot. Yeah. You know, God said in his law, do not, there were several that he gave his people. He said, do not mistreat the lame and the deaf. Okay, that was one of the laws. The commands to cause his people to live different from the world. Now, if you take that to the T, like we would today, we'd say, oh, the lame and the deaf. So the blind, treat them however you want to. They're not in the law. But see, God's law was intended to give a heart behind it. Look, here's what I want. Don't mistreat these people. Don't mistreat the underprivileged or those who have less ability than you. Don't do that. And so Israel had started becoming like real legalistic. Let's follow the letters of the law and not the heart of the law. Jesus came later and began to give the heart of the law. Okay, you say, don't commit adultery, and I'm fine. But I say, if you even lust after a woman, you've already done it in your heart. Look, the whole law is summed up in this, he said. Love the Lord your God with all your might, heart, strength, and then love your neighbor as yourself. That's the heart of the law. Care about other people. Don't take from them. Love them. But we're a very technical people. And so we've moved far away from God's ideal, it seems, because we get caught up in our own thoughts, our own details. In Psalm chapter 7, verse 11, it says, God is a just judge, and God is angry with the wicked every day. Now, a better word than angry, because of our definition of angry, is, wow, God's up there going, man, they make me mad. I'm mad. That's not what he's doing. It's indignation is the better word. Indignation is, I don't like, I hate, I loathe the fact that the poor are being taken advantage of. I loathe the fact that people with power are taking advantage of those who don't have power, that there's injustice, that those who are doing good are being overrun by those who are doing bad. That angers me. And anger at that. That's what God is consistently angry over. And one day, right now, he's patient, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. But one day, intentionally, on purpose, he's going to finally judge. He will judge the world. And all of those who are not found in him will find themselves under that judgment. And it has nothing to do with how moral you lived. That has nothing to do with it at all. Because the Pharisees, by the law standards, by their own laws, they lived above the people, came to the law. But that wasn't the standard. The standard was, do you have a heart for God? Do you love God? Are you loving and caring for the others? Jesus is expressing a righteous indignation. He's quoting where he says, you've turned this into a den of thieves. He's quoting from Jeremiah chapter 7. Let me read verses 9 through 11 for you. God said, will you steal, murder, commit adultery, swear falsely, burn incense to Baal, and walk after other gods whom you do not know, and then come and stand before me in this house, which is called by my name, and say, we are delivered to do all this abominations? Has this house, which is called by my name, become a den of thieves in your eyes? Behold, I have seen it, says the Lord. He's quoting a text where, or an idea, where God saw that their worship was insincere. They were going through the motions. They were worshiping on the Sabbath. But for the rest of the week, they were living like the pagans. He said, I hate it. I don't like your worship. I don't care if you're following the rules to a T when you bring your sacrifice. I don't like it. I don't receive it. You know, Jesus hasn't lost his temper here. In this time, I'm trying to set the feel. Those who watched Jesus weren't kicking back going, well, maybe some of them were, like the disciples were probably going, oh my goodness, this is not good for the kingdom, you know, the kingdom I want to be a part of. The religious leaders, the money changers, they're all caught off guard. Maybe there were some that were tired of the money changers going back there, all right, finally, somebody's standing up for them. But this was a hard to take moment, not just fun. It was serious. This was the heart of a holy God being poured out on a place that was supposed to be a holy place and was anything but that. He did not lose his temper because that would be wrong. If he lost his temper, that would be sin. Proverbs 14:17 says, a quick-tempered man acts foolishly. He didn't lose his temper. In Titus, we read that the leader of a church should not be quick-tempered or a man given over to anger. So that cannot describe Jesus in this moment, or we have someone who's not a good leader. And we know that's not true of him. Now, I want to touch on something really quick before moving on, but this whole idea of discipline, which Jesus is bringing into his house, straightening it out, anger and how we have outbursts of anger. The reason that so many parents are opposed to what we would call discipline, firm, strong discipline in the home, is because what they have seen more often is not strong, firm discipline as much as outbursts of wrath, outbursts of anger. And so they quickly, we're going to have discipline in this home. No, we're not going to do that. We're not going to discipline. Because they're not defining their terms the same way, or maybe they are, and the strong hand needs to realize you don't discipline by outbursts of wrath. See, discipline is supposed to be swift, intentional. Something to remember. That's what Jesus is doing. This isn't something that was quickly forgotten. Like, you're collecting money from the people. Go sit in the corner. You're in timeout, young man. Let that be a lesson to everybody who's changing money. Yes, that can help. Kids today hate sitting still. But it needs to be something they don't want to happen again. There needs to be discipline. It needs to be intentional. Building on the solid
rock. Pastor Troy will pick up where he left off next time you join us for another study through the Gospel of Matthew here on Building on the Solid Rock. If you live in the San Antonio, Texas area, we want to invite you to join us for worship. The messages that you hear on Building on the Solid Rock are produced from worship services at Calvary Chapel Solid Rock. Maybe the teaching you heard is exactly what you're looking for in a church. Then please join us. You can find our service times for Sunday morning worship and our midweek Bible study at our website. That's buildingonthesolidrock.com. Again, for more information about our ministry, including service times and driving directions, log on to buildingonthesolidrock.com. That's buildingonthesolidrock.com. There, you will be able to listen to or download any of our messages in their entirety, as well as get to know us better. Well, that's all the time we have for today. We want to thank you for tuning in, and may God richly bless you.
Let the light of Christ shine as we grow in Him. Come have your way in us.
Come have